Hi, you're listening to the Fanboy Strikes Back weekly review podcast. Hey, welcome to Fanboy Strikes Back, a podcast that we put together to discuss comic book weekly reviews, television, movies, things of a pop culture nature. Mainly focusing on comic books, though. I'm Eric.
And I'm David.
And we will be discussing books that have come out this week. We will be discussing what happens in those books, so there will be spoilers. If you haven't read your books this week, go ahead and pause the podcast and come back to it after you've read the books. And, yeah, from that point, let's start it off.
We gotta give the people a little bit of our history. So you've been reading comic books, Eric. Tell the people about yourself. They want to know.
Well, I have been reading comics since the late 1980s. I started... had a few comic books here and there when I was a kid. Didn't really grasp onto it right away until probably 1987 or 88. Got really caught up in the Batman books right before the movie came out, basically. And I think pretty much that 1989 Burton Batman flick pretty much solidified me into comics. So I was all in after that. So. I've pretty much followed the Batman, Robin, and Nightwing. Those are my trifecta of comic heroes. But I'm a big fan of the DC universe. That was kind of where I grew up and cut my bread and butter from. But thanks to David, I've recently started getting into Marvel and coming over to the dark side. So Spider-Man, Avengers. I'm a big fan of Bendis. I've been reading Powers for a long time, ever since that came out. Love his creator-owned books. Brubaker on Captain America and Daredevil, and he's been doing some great work. And there's Illuminati, which we will be talking about later in this podcast.
Yes, we will.
So, go ahead, David.
Okay. I am, as Eric is the DC guy, I am the Marvel guy. I've been reading since the very early 90s. Started off with Amazing Spider-Man. That's my boy. That's who I love. Also very big into the X-Men. I read all the X-books, even when they suck, which...
It's an expensive hobby.
We're not going to talk about Grant Morrison.
Not today.
Because that'd be very bad. But I'm a Marvel guy. Started getting into DC at the death of Superman, where DC quote unquote went dark, right when Kyle Rayner became Green Lantern. Kyle is the Green Lantern, as far as I am concerned.
True. We're gonna get to that later too.
Yes, we will. We gotta talk about all that stuff. And so that's how it's gonna kind of go. I think we're gonna have a good mix here. I'm more of the Marvel guy. Eric's the DC guy. In between that, we read a little bit of indie books here and there, and so we have a nice little smorgasbord.
Yeah, the indie books we're starting to really kind of dive into a little bit more recently. One of my earliest books was The Crow, and I got a lot of shit for that in middle school. So I kind of stayed away from that for a little while, but it's still a good book. Still enjoy the indie books. Strangers in Paradise is great. Toughest Poison, some of my favorites. So, okay, well, this week's pick, I decided to go with Green Lantern, number 20, actually. Oh, I know. Man. Well, I didn't want to go for an obvious one. I thought I'd think outside the box a little bit. And the reason I went with it is because I've been around the Green Lantern mythos for a while now, and I've never really grasped onto Hal Jordan too much as a lead Green Lantern. I was always a fan of Kyle Rayner. And I always thought the best thing they ever did to Hal Jordan was make him go crazy and kill him off. So, despite his rebirth tale being actually pretty good, the book has kind of, I think, been lackluster ever since. And within the last three issues or so. I think it started on issue 17 or 18. It's been surprisingly good again, and it's just been fun. Like, we've, you know, Hal, they've brought some older characters back into the mix, I think, from Hal's past with Carol, his ex-girlfriend. They've brought back the Star Sapphire character, which it's not the original character, but the concept is still the same. And I think it's been actually pretty good. Jeff Johns is, and I love his work. He's been great on, you know, Teen Titans. While not necessarily a deep writer, he's a fun writer.
Right.
And and I know, David, what you're going to say is the artwork is, you know, basically TNA all over the place. But
I thought the art was horrible. But
really, I really enjoyed it. I think it kind of gave a bit more realistic look, and I'm looking through it right now, and the facial expressions are something that I kind of dig, and it's kind of got a painted, almost like a painted watercolor type look to it, which I'm really digging.
I like the coloring. It's Daniel Acuna?
Yeah.
Acuna? Well, what about the story? What do you think of that?
The story, I'm digging. I thought it's kind of an easy way to get Carol back into Hal's life. Yeah, I've always been a big fan of Hal and Carol, kind of like, they're one of those DC couples, like Ollie and Dinah, and so on and so on. And I think she's been kind of, she was, well, Hal is this kind of cool, macho guy, and kudos to Johns for finally writing Hal the way he should be written, as far as he's just this kind of, he's the test pilot. He's the arrogant guy who can go into a bar and pick up any girl, but still be a nice guy. And I think Carol has always kind of given him an opposite, something to kind of play off of. She's very prim and proper, to where he's kind of a little bit more wild and such. So I've really enjoyed that contrast between the two of them. And so, I thought the story was actually pretty good. The whole there being an actual core of Star Sapphires was a little different. I think that's kind of playing off the upcoming Sinestro core a little bit too much. I don't think we need a core of everything. But the thing that kind of sold me on the book was I turned to the last page, and they, spoiler alert, but the female Guardians, I guess, who created the Star Sapphire, have a collection going of these different lanterns with the Green Lantern, the Yellow Lantern of the Guardians, and now their own Pink Lantern. And they're saying that something big is coming, and they need to collect the others. And I was excited. Like,
you know, that's what's gonna happen? I will give you that. This was, I didn't like the whole story. It's the only time I've ever really liked Hal Jordan was in New Frontier, and seeing him and Carol in the bar and their little banter, kind of, it was a little reminiscent of that, which I liked. But the end of this book was great. Because you see, like, you know, the Pink Lantern, the Green Lantern, the Yellow Lantern, but you see, like, four more places for, like, four more lanterns on the sides. And apparently each one, because they keep on talking about the Star Sapphires and how they're linked to love. And apparently each lantern is linked to an emotion, because you have pink with love, green is will, yellow is fear. So...
Yeah,
you see them trying to say that they have to collect them all, and that's very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think it's setting something up, and I'm really excited for it.
Okay, well, if I would have had to pick a pick of the week, Eric, you have any guess what that might have been?
I'm going to say it was probably my second pick, which was Avengers Illuminati.
Illuminati. First of all, I have to say that I have a little man crush on Brian Bendis.
He's met him three times and still talks like a little girl in front of him.
I know. I can't. Let's not talk about that. But I cannot tell you how much I love this book. Basically, what the Illuminati is Reed Richards, Doctor Strange, Black Bolt, Charles Xavier, Iron Man, and Namor. They kind of take it upon themselves to get together and maybe form kind of this secret society. And you find out that they've been together, and it's going through the past big events of the Marvel Universe and showing how the Illuminati had some kind of hand in the role. And this point, we see them after the Secret War, and them going after the Beyonder. Now, I wasn't a huge fan of the Secret War. It is what it is. You know, anything back then was kind of cheesy and hokey. But you had the Beyonder, who at that point was just a mysterious god. He takes certain heroes and villains and puts them on the planet and just makes them fight, because he wants to know who would win in the struggle between good and evil. And they end up teaming up, they kind of go against the Beyonder, they get back home, and it was just a big fight, and it was cool and all, but it was very empty, just like, you know, all the stories of that time. But you kind of go back now with this Illuminati book, and they throw in the fact that the Beyonder was actually an inhuman, and he was also a mutant, and that was what gave him his powers.
See, I felt that was a big revelation, and it, like, I didn't read it, and so it just fell flat on me. I was like, oh, that's great, awesome.
Yeah, this was good. This was really good, because Black Bolt, who's part of the Illuminati, he's the leader of the Inhumans. We're not going to get so much into the Inhumans, but one of the rites of passage for the Inhumans is that once they reach a certain age, they're affected with these mists called the Terrigen Mists, and that usually deforms them in a certain sense, but it gives them their powers, and so all the Inhumans have these different weird powers. And so you learn that the Beyonder was a mutant, and then after being exposed to the mist, it just gave him these incredible godlike abilities. And you really see kind of Black Bolt really dealing with this pretty hard, because he doesn't even know who the Beyonder is. He doesn't know who this guy was. He's their king. This was one of his servants. He has all these godlike powers. He's kind of going crazy. And Black Bolt just does not even remember who he is. So, I love this book.
Yeah.
I love Jim Chung's art. I think his art is beautiful. I can't say enough about this book.
It was really good. This is actually the only book that I enjoy Tony Stark in, where he's not a complete asshole. And unfortunately, he wasn't hardly even in this issue. But
right.
You know,
he wasn't in this issue.
I liked seeing Professor X in that horrible Jim Lee floating wheelchair thing that he had back then. But no, it was a good book, and I agree. This was probably my second choice of the week. It was really. I'm enjoying it in the sense that I didn't read a whole lot of his old Marvel events, and so this is kind of giving me a window into what happened in the past. And I know this is going to eventually pay off in, I think, two issues now, where we hit Civil War and we hit World War Hulk. Which,
right, and then
I'm going to drop it like a rock, because I hate the Hulk. So.
Right, but the big thing is that we're seeing the Illuminati and how they've had a play in all the past events, and no one knows it. But then when we get to the last issue, everyone knows who they are, and something big happens to reveal that, and they're going to go their separate ways. And I'm really interested to see how this is going to play out, because it's not going to be pretty. And with the World War Hulk thing coming up, is that, if you didn't know, everyone here listening should, is that the Illuminati got together, and they decided that, you know, Bruce Banner and the Hulk, they can't deal with it anymore. He's always going crazy, he's always killing people, he's just a loose cannon. So what do? They shoot him out into space.
They should have done it like 20 years ago. Good riddance. Hate the Hulk.
Be nice to Banner.
I'm just saying. You know, you anyway, got this guy. Okay.
Yeah, alright. Banner goes to a planet. He kind of conquers the planet. He becomes a gladiator. There was a big Planet Hulk storyline. I can't say that I read it, because I'm not a huge fan of the Hulk either. But now that you see that the Hulk is on his way back to Earth, and he's basically just pissed off because they shot him out into space.
Wouldn't you be mad? I'm just saying.
I've never been shot out into space before, but I'd probably be a little ticked off.
Wait for it. So, yeah, it was good. It was really good. I'm enjoying. It's given me a glimpse in the Marvel Universe past, and I'm kind of digging it, because, you know, besides Civil War, I really have a horrible knowledge of the past there. So,
Well, let's go for something that was so great, like the Illuminati, and let's talk about Justice Society of America number 6.
Okay, got no clue what's going on in that book.
I hate this book. I don't hate this book. I hated this issue. I hate the storyline between the JLA and the JSA. I love the actual JSA book, but I have no idea what's happening. Eric, you're the DC guy.
Well, the thing is, like, Legion, and the whole connection between Legion and Superman is originally they went back when he was just a kid and when he was Superboy, pre-86 Crisis, and they all got together and were a young band of adventurers. But then, like, Crisis kind of wiped that out, Zero Hour kind of redefined it, and now I have no idea what the new Crisis did to it or what the multiverse has anything to do with it. And I'm reading
apparently
this.
after Infinite Crisis now, that Clark knows that he was part of the Legion now, and he remembers all that,
right? Well, right. Like, the thing that happened was after the first Crisis, the past was rewritten to where Clark was never Superboy. He went to Metropolis, and he became Superman. That was the first time it ever happened. After Infinite Crisis, that's all been redone now, and apparently he was Superboy for a time, or he at least operated as a kid with powers, not necessarily Superboy, but we haven't been given that story yet. And I'm reading this arc, and both in this and Justice League of America, and it's not necessarily written badly. I think both Johns and Meltzer are having a ball writing it, because I know they both have big soft spots for that age. And the art's still really good in both books, I think. Not really good, but it's passable in both books. But I don't care about... And it's really too... The first arc of Justice Society was the whole Legacy series, and that really kind of sucked me into the book. And I really like the characters. I love Damage from the old days, and I'm enjoying seeing his progression.
I love it.
Yeah, and, I think he came out right near that whole early 90s, when there was all of these weird little explosive characters where everyone was a bit more extreme back then, and Damage was kind of born of that era. And he kind of went away for a while until Infinite Crisis. He popped up again and got kind of mangled, and then he ended back up in the Justice Society. And I was really happy to see him back. And the only thing is that I don't care about where this particular arc went. And I think, God, are we done now? I'm checking it out. I think so, but I'm excited.
No, we're not done. There's still...
Please? No?
Oh,
it's continued in...
JLA, number 10.
JLA, okay.
See, that's how bad it is that we don't even know what's going on. We don't even know if it's finished.
I did pay attention. Like, next issue, we're starting a new arc. And fine. Like, I'll be back on board for that, you know? I'm excited for it. I'm not going to drop the book by any means. But I just don't care. I don't know what's going on. And I think the whole... And it's weird, because sometimes this works out really well and sometimes it doesn't, is when you do a story arc and you alternate books. For me, I kind of find it obnoxious, because then I have to usually go out and buy books that I don't usually buy. I was buying both of these, but I know it kind of moves the storyline along a little faster, because you can put it out, you know, that many months quicker, but at the same time, like, I'm going back and forth, and then they come out on different weeks, and I'm like, okay, I forgot what happened in the previous book, and I'm back in this one, and at this point, like, I stopped caring, so...
Well, and then you have a book... Or, I mean, it's a crossover between two books, JLA, JSA. But this crossover is all about the Legion, and they have their own book. So it just doesn't make sense, because, first of all, I'm the Marvel guy. I do know a bit about the JLA, and I'm getting into the JSA. And so I'm reading these two books, but all they're doing is talking about the Legion. And that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, the thing is, we've got pretty... Both teams are still pretty new at this point, and it'd be nice to see them interact a little bit more amongst themselves, and to see a little bit more character growth amongst some of the newer heroes. Like, Geo-Force, I don't care about Geo-Force, but make me care about Geo-Force. Like, you know, I didn't care for Red Tornado really at all, and really the only thing I knew about Red Tornado is he was in the League a long time ago, and then he popped up in the Young Justice books for a little while. But I didn't care about him at all until that first Meltzer arc, and I kind of got into it. I was there, I was with it. And Yeah, I think that just needs to happen a little bit more before you start going off and focusing on something else completely. And like you said, Legion has their own book, although it seems to be kind of Supergirl dominated by right now. But
right.
That's a whole different discussion. I think they could have done it in their own book and had it be their own arc, and we could have gotten much better stories out of both Meltzer and Johns in the meantime.
I don't even know what's. I mean, they have. I mean, if we can try to talk about the story, they have the Legion characters who have been on Earth, but they didn't know that they were part of the Legion because when they travel through time, there's devices that they use to protect themselves, something like that. And so there's a spoken,
it's like a spoken, yeah.
That makes and then them one of them who they are.
One of them went too far and ended up in Kingdom Come and then came back, and right, he has no idea.
That's part of the multiverse. He's kind of crazy, and apparently they're trying to kill themselves, one of them, to bring back a fallen Legion member who we're not sure who it is. We think it might be Lightning Lad.
Lightning Lad is, I think, what it was. But, yeah, I mean, it just... talk about a bang-up, crackerjack idea that is, you know, I mean... if anything, these kids need to learn like how to deal with loss, and I think that would have been a better story. Let us see Lightning Lad die, make us care for him, kill him, and then let us have the fallout. Like that, I think would have been a better story. Like as it stands now, I'm like, but Lightning Lad died. I'll take your word for it.
I don't know. I don't really care.
And then one of them is like, one of us has to die to bring him back, and like, well, that makes no sense.
You can't, we don't care about these characters. I mean, some people might, we don't. And so, really, if one of them dies to bring back Lightning Lad, who I don't even care about, I don't care who dies. It doesn't matter to me. Kill them all, as much as I'm concerned.
You know, I'd really kind of like to see, I think the Legion kind of, I think they focus more on a group of people who maybe don't read comics anymore, who maybe grew up with Legion and cared about him back in the 60s and 70s, but... you know, they might not. They might still read comics. I could be wrong, but they might have grown out of it. And I think a lot of contemporary readers don't really care about the Legion that much. They haven't really been a mainstay in the DC universe. You know, they'll come and they go. And maybe that new cartoon on TV. I've seen it a couple times, and it's okay for younger viewers. And I could see younger viewers getting into the Legion through that. But I'm really curious to like know any hardcore Legion fans, because I've never met any. So if you're out there, listen and let us know, because I'm really curious to see who's all out there.
And don't be offended by what we said about the Legion.
Well, no, you've got your own opinions too. You know, let us know.
Okay, you want to talk about Countdown?
Please. This issue was okay. Go ahead.
I am. You know, I am one of the very few people who was not very happy with 52. Now, as 52 as a story, I thought it was great. The characters, the arc, it was wonderful. Now, what I was very upset about is that 52 didn't accomplish what it set out to do. Because, you know, after Infinite Crisis, DC jumped 1 year later. 52 was supposed to be the missing year, and it wasn't. And World War III was supposed to, you know, fix that. And we won't talk about World War III, because that would be an hour of just rants. But I don't even know, first of all, what Countdown is supposed to be. You know, when they talked about 52, they're like, it's going to be the missing year. And Countdown is like, you know that it's supposed to be counting down to something. And they're saying that it's supposed to be the spine of the DC universe. But right now, I don't like it.
I'm enjoying it. I think they're doing the same thing that they did in 52, where they have a focused group of characters and they're running along with it. I'm digging the Pied Piper and the Trickster. I've been a Flash fan ever since the Mark Waid days, and you know, they both played in pretty heavily from back then. I'm a little confused on the Black Adam, Mary Marvel storyline, because all of a sudden Black Adam's back and he has powers, and we skipped over a whole story that I wanted to know about. Like
that was like when they left Black Adam in 52, it was great because he didn't have his power, and Billy, Captain Marvel, changed his spoken words so that he wouldn't have access to his power. So, you know, looking at this, I wasn't sure if I mean, he's gone a little bit crazy after what happened to him. But I'm not sure if he still has his powers, because, you know, you don't see him using them, but, you know, when he doesn't have his powers, he's, you know, he has that frail body, so...
Well, yeah, he's got his powers back somehow, but they never explained how, and they went directly, like, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago, they said, okay, we depowered him, and he's not a threat anymore. And then, like, 2 weeks after that, the countdown issue comes out, and he's back, and it's like, what the hell? You know, you skipped over such a good story right there. And maybe they'll come back and explain it, but I was kind of hoping for something in sequence. And then Jimmy Olsen, I don't care. And
Jimmy Olsen is getting superpowers, apparently, when we see him in Arkham.
This is another thing where DC is trying to shove the Silver Age back down our throats. And back in the Silver Age, Jimmy Olsen drank magic elixirs and he got powers, and he was Elastic Lad, I believe, and
very nice.
He had a variety of different roles back in the old days. Like he was Superman's barber, I believe, at one point.
Of course,
but I know, genius, right? So all of a sudden, yeah, like he's elasticy and stretchy again, and apparently he has super speed now too. And I'm like,
I guess so.
Is this something like... And here's what I don't get, is they were kind of touting Jimmy Olsen as, oh, well, he's the everyman. He's going to be the normal guy amidst all this watching it. And that's all good and fine, and I was kind of excited about that, because I was like, make me like Jimmy Olsen. Because I dig him in the movies and the cartoon, and I thought he's a viable character, but with how many years he's been in the comics, there hasn't really been a whole lot of development. And I was kind of excited to see that progress a little bit, and it seems like the only development is making him not the everyman. He's still kind of got that point of view, but then all of a sudden he's got these oddball powers that we don't really know about. And then the whole cover where the death of a new god, I haven't read the full volume of the Jack Kirby New God stuff, but I didn't know who Light Ray was. I don't know how he fits in with Orion or Darkseid or anybody like that, so it didn't really impact me a whole bunch. And I thought the bit at the end where, you know, the cover says Death of a New God and pretty much has the money shot on the cover, and then at the end you have that really horribly cheesy line where Superman's like, what does it mean for the universe when a god dies? And it's just
right.
Like,
I was like, really, you kind of clubbed me over the head with that one.
We've got better writers than that. Like, come on, guys. I think it was late at night, and they're like, okay, happy hour closes in 5 minutes. We got to make it, so.
Come on.
Use what's on the cover. Just go. Yeah.
Let's talk about Jason Todd.
But there was a scene in here I like, and you got right to it, which was the Jason Todd Bonnie Troy.
Now, I do not like Jason Todd, and I know that you do, but, you know, first of all, I have to say this, that I'm glad that they're focusing on are going to Jason Todd, Donna Troy, Kyle Rayner, because those are three people who have had a big impact in DC Universe, but now they're just kind of wandering around, and like DC doesn't know what they're going to do with them. So I'm glad that they're, you know, doing something with these characters. But Jason Todd is...
He's in character, though. I mean, they've kind of been saying he's, from other things I've been hearing along the pipeline, is, you know, oh, he's written so differently in this, and not really, like, he's
in character. That's why, he's in character. That's why yeah. People killed him. That's why they voted that he should die.
You know what? People, they're a fickle bunch. Bloodthirsty fickle bunch. And you know what? Jason Todd never...
If anyone doesn't know, tell him the story.
Here's the problem that I see is people don't like change. You know, you had Dick Grayson as Robin, and he was a very goody Robin. He was a great Robin. I loved him as Robin, but you know, he obeyed almost everything Batman said except, you know, near the end. And then you had Jason, which was a complete 180, which was the street kid. And I think it was a much more interesting story to put a street kid who's going to argue with Batman on most things in that role, because then you have a lot of room for growth and maturity. But then, I don't think they really gave it enough time to sink in. Like, they gave it, a year and a half before they put the phone call stunt into effect. And he never grew out of that bit of a snot role. But,
Right, and I think, it's a lot easier to have change now, but back then, you know, having a new character like that, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I think it was easy, it was just easier for him to kill him off, too. Like, I would have been interested to see if the phone vote came out differently, what they would have done with this character, but it wasn't easy out for him. And so, basically, now you have Jason back, and he's kind of taken on the anti-hero Punisher role in the DC Universe. He still fights for the right of good, supposedly, but then if he encounters bad guys or, you know, drug lords or mobsters or anything, he just out and out kills them. He's kind of gone beyond that bit of Batman's training where, you know, they don't kill.
DC's Punisher.
Right. He crosses that line, and he feels it's necessary, which he was killed, he remembers, so I think that would be a logical progression for a character like that. And
well,
so, yeah.
One might argue that that's what Batman should be. And so it's nice to have someone in the Batman family like that, because Batman's very, very dark, but then there's a line that he doesn't cross. You know, a lot of people would say that he should cross that line. And so it is kind of cool to have someone related to Batman that will do that.
Yeah, the thing about Jason, though, too, is, like, ever since he came back, it was very trendy to hate Jason Todd, because he's the bad boy, and no one likes him anyway, so let's all just, like, gravitate all of our hatred towards Jason Todd. When, if you actually look at the Red Hood comeback books in the Batman books, the storylines were actually pretty good right up until, the last issue, and it kind of fell apart. But the whole characterization and the go-between between Batman and Jason was actually really good. It was interesting to watch, and it kept me really interested. Now, the problem is they haven't had a place for Jason ever since, and I'm really trying to forget the whole Nightwing thing, because that was just awful.
Giant squid, Eric, giant squid.
That was just horrible. I don't know what... Someone lost a bet that day, and that's what happened.
That was good. That was some good stuff.
But really going back to old school comics, back in the late 1980s, Donna Troy was actually leading... Back when she was Wonder Girl, she was actually leading the Titans at that point. And they were the new Teen Titans. It was during Marv Wolfman's run. And there was a story arc during that time when... I think it was like right after the first Crisis, where several of the members had left the Titans. Cyborg, Raven, Changeling, and Nightwing, and Jericho were all gone. And Donna was trying to put a new team back together, and so she recruited Jason Todd as Robin, and she was basically trying to recruit the original team. So she got Wally West back as Flash, and she got Speedy back, Roy Harper, and she got Aqualad back. And so she had this team, and she also had Hawk, because at that point Dove had been killed off.
That's too bad.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, it was some really good character interaction. It was some of the most likable Jason Todd ever was when he was on the Titans books. But there was some chemistry there. Like, Donna was kind of an older sister figure to Jason, and they both relied on each other. I mean, there was some really well-written moments in that story arc. And coming back to this, I was really excited to just see those two characters interacting again. So it kind of made me warm up a little bit to those old stories. And they did address that, you know, Jason's back and Donna's back, and there are these anomalies that need to be dealt with. So it was only like a 2-page bit, but I really enjoyed it. So going from that into Teen Titans.
Oh, okay. Now here's the thing: is that
switch.
I really sound like I hate
really
DC today. Titans is one of my favorite DC books. I think it's great. I think it's lost steam lately, but I still think it's a great book. I think Geoff Johns is a great writer, but I thought that his Nightwing, Robin, Jason Todd, all of that, all the connection, was just horrible in this book.
Johns didn't write this book.
Oh, that's right. This is Adam Beechin, right? They switched over. Yeah, I mean, they're kicking each other in the nuts, Eric.
Well, sometimes that's what you gotta do.
That's true.
That wasn't my favorite moment. Although, I really enjoyed the artwork, actually. Batista was really good. I thought it was a bit... jumpy the way they did the first. You had to read the first part of the story, and then you had to read Countdown to get the middle part, and then you had to come back to this to get the final part.
We have to talk about that too, because you know, there's a lot of people who complain about stuff about Civil War, about how, you know, they couldn't just read one thing, but, you know, it really bugs me when I see something in a book, and then I see a little box that says, do you want to know what happened? Then read so-and-so, blah, 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 you know, and I never got that in Civil War, and I don't like that. I mean, even if I am reading the book, still bothers me.
Well, it's not like it's not like Countdown was touted as a contained storyline either. Like, you know, as it's called the spine of the DCU, that it's going to reach out and affect other books.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, if you're gonna show something, show it in that book too. I don't care if I have to see it twice. Don't like allude to it and then, you know, tell me to go buy another book.
I was kind of surprised actually that they didn't show it twice, because they have had a point of doing that lately in Countdown. They'll take snapshots, you know, a page or two from other books in that week, you know, in that week of publishing, and put it out inside Countdown as well. And so I was kind of surprised on that, but getting past that, it didn't put me off too much. I was still along for the story. I gotta say how much I'm loving Ravager on this team. I thought she was always a really good character, and I love, like, she's just so different from all the other team members. And she's actually probably the most real teenage girl on the team. Like, she's the wild child.
Cassie's pretty emotional. There's a teenage girl that I've ever seen.
You're alienating, hopefully, some of our audience. But I don't know. She's a wild child. She's, you know, she has feelings and emotions, and she's got father issues. And it's nice that she has a big brother back in Jericho now. And I think it's been really good. But I did really enjoy the scenes with Donna and Cassie. And I'm a Donna Troy fan. I'm a fan of any one of the original five Titans, except maybe Aqualad. But it's nice to see how Robin has Nightwing, Cassie now has Donna to kind of fall back against and be that mentor. Yeah, the actual mentors aren't really much.
That part was great.
Yeah.
That part was great. And I like the whole Cassie being an emotional girl right now, I think, like, that's what I want to see. And I really feel that with her, because, you know, my biggest complaint about Infinite Crisis was that they killed Superboy. And that's fine, you know. We all know the story that they were going to kill Dick Grayson, and they backed down and they killed Superboy instead. But I think the biggest problem with that is that you see, when Captain America dies, you see Fallen Son. You see people dealing with their deaths. And yeah, that's what you're seeing with Cassie here. My biggest complaint about Infinite Crisis is that, honestly, afterwards, you never even saw Clark talk about Connor.
Well, yeah, and that's the horrible point, is besides Bruce and Tim, none of these other kids have mentors, or even their supposed mentors, like Clark and Diana, aren't really ever there for these kids, which is such a, like, horrible, like, weekend father type thing.
It's just, so I thought, like, it was great. Seeing Donna with Cassie, I thought that was just perfect, spot on, like, Donna just telling her, like, it is going to be hard, I know, I've been there, you have to move on, and then Cassie just kind of breaking down. I was like, that's real.
Yeah, and that's good. And I don't know, did you ever read the Graduation Day trade? When they went from Young Justice to Titans?
I can't find it anywhere.
I found mine, so I'll let you borrow it. And so and there was a lot of that, too, and that issue was actually addressed. Now, going on to the next scene, the first bit of it where you had Jason and Tim all in the same picture, I was I'm excited. These are all the Robins back again. And of course they're bickering and they're fighting, you know, they're trying to keep Jason in check. And I think it wasn't written poorly. It was written okay as far as playing off who they're writing Jason to be eventually and who they've written him to be in the past.
Right.
You know, he's got this heroic side, but he steps over the line, and because of that, no one else trusts him. And then he did have that attack on the Teen Titans in John's run, where he came and kicked the crap out of Tim, which was why I said okay when Tim went up and just kicked him in the sack, because, you know, it was nice to see Tim get a little revenge on it, because I'm, you know, Tim Drake's a good Robin, better than Jason, I thought.
I love Tim. But it was just kind of too, like, Three Stooges, kind of tongue-in-cheek, where it's just, when this is actually the tone of the book is, like, so much more serious than that.
Yeah,
and I thought, just kind of like, all right, yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yeah, I thought Nightwing's reaction to Jason was all kind of over fisted anyway. Like, I don't like how you keep showing your face here and blah blah blah. And the thing was, like, back a long time ago, Dick was actually one of Jason's only friends. Like, Bruce was always kind of he was there for Jason, but Dick really helped him out both with the Titans and in the Batman books too, as far as growing into that role and kind of teaching him a little here and there when he could. And it was a really nice big brother role. And they even kind of continued that after Jason died, where there was a storyline where Nightwing ended up quitting after he'd almost killed the Joker. He didn't want to do it. And then the only thing that kind of shook him out of it was remembering Jason and remember why he does what he does. And now I'm kind of sad to see that has kind of dissolved now that Jason's back and they're so much at each other's throats. But
is that stemming from the Nightwing storyline where Jason was Nightwing?
Well, but the whole thing during that too was Dick was just written so out of character. Like, at one point they actually said, I wish Jason had died, and it's like, Dick would never say that. You don't ever wish, your little brother died, even if he's running around in your clothes, or let alone just running around in your clothes. I mean, it was so out of character and poorly written that I try and forget it even existed.
Hey, giant squid.
I know.
Let's move on. Something good.
Let's go on.
Daredevil 97 came out, and you do not read Daredevil.
I did not pick that up. I thought about it. I almost picked it up, but I didn't.
It's very interesting because I did not start reading Daredevil until the movie came out, which, we all know how the movie was.
I liked it.
I liked the movie too.
I didn't read Daredevil.
I liked the movie too, but Bendis' run on Daredevil, one of the best runs ever. I can't wait until the omnibus comes out. I don't care how much money it is. I will buy it the first day. It's wonderful. And the whole time, everyone's like, no one's going to be able to top Bendis. Because Bendis, he outed Matt Murdock, and the secret identity was all...
Matt Murdock's gay?
How dare you?
Okay.
How dare you?
Horrible joke. And it'd be okay if he was. I'm just saying. And just outed him. No.
Outed his identity. And just made his life a living hell. Brought back Bullseye, Elektra. It was just phenomenal. And so, at the very end of Bendis' run, he puts Murdock in prison. And that was it. So, Brubaker comes along on his white steed. And he really just, takes it and runs with it. And it's amazing. And this arc has been dealing with the Gladiator, who is one of Daredevil's old enemies, but is, he's kind of rehabilitated himself, but he's still in prison. And he starts to kind of murder people. And you don't know, he's kind of crazy. He kind of has these multiple personalities. And you don't know if it's, the Gladiator taking over, or if it's really Melvin, that's his real name. And Matt goes to see him as his attorney. And Matt discovers that he's lying about, not killing these people. And Matt knows that, the Gladiator is back, and he's not sure who's in control, or if Melvin's just finally thinking right for the first time, and if he's choosing this, but that he is in trouble. And if you can see Gladiator, he has a horrible design. He has, razor blades on his arms, huge, jigsaw razor blades. And he cuts people with them. So
is that what he does with them?
Yeah, who knows what else. Not the greatest design, but it's just... If you're not reading this book, you need to read this book. Eric, you need to read this book.
I know.
And, what happens is that Matt's having lunch with dinner with his wife, Mila, who's also blind. The Gladiator busts in, and Matt tells Mila to run. She runs home. Murdock starts fighting the Gladiator, and the Gladiator just beats the crap out of him, which is something you hardly ever see in Daredevil, because Daredevil can really usually take anyone out. And he knocks him out cold. Murdock wakes up, and he's in the back of a police car, and they're calling Tony Stark to come and get him. And at this point, Matt can hear someone talking to him. And, Murdock has his enhanced senses, and He has super hearing and everything. And so this person's talking to them, or to him, through a voice scrambler. So he's trying to pinpoint who this person is and where they are, but he can't. And so all this person is saying to him is that something's going on with Melvin, and that Matt needs to figure it out, and that it's serious, and that, you know, if he really knew where Melvin was now, that Matt better do something about it quickly. And so it cuts to the last page, and you see Matt's wife in their apartment by herself, thinking that Matt's home, and she's blind, and you see Melvin right behind her. So the next issue should be pretty interesting. I mean, I don't think they're going to kill Mila, because they just introduced her not too long ago, but at this point in this book, anything can happen.
You know, if Marvel had balls, they'd stuff her in a fridge. Because we've all seen that happen before.
A couple times.
A couple of times, that's true. They go back to the well, you know?
So I think
those are all my books this week. I had a pretty light week, so it was kind of nice, actually. So, right. Yeah.
Well, I guess that's it. Now we got to kind of plug this thing. You know, we have a site right now. It's fanboystrikeback.com. We also have a nice little email address. It's contact@fanboystrikeback.com.
It's a nice little email address.
Isn't it? You like that?
I do.
This is our first episode.
It's a little bumpy. Hopefully it will get better. But
it can only go up from here.
We are also on MySpace, because most of everybody is. So look us up. We are Fanboys Strike Back. And be our friend, please. Leave us messages and comments.
We need some friends.
Hopefully positive ones. So, thank you all for listening. And I think that's it.
This is it. So I'm David.
I'm Eric.
We'll see you next week.
You're listening to the Fanboy Strikes Back weekly comic reviews. Okay, damn it. Let me start over.
Oh, dude, this is going to be so much fun.
This is going to be bad.